for trees?
Jeez, you're coming up by yourself.
Well, so you're the only one signed up for just as well, so I'm going to get this thing out over here, right? Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Martha Cagle, Water Resources Department. We're handing out written testimony on the bill. This measure was introduced at the request of the department. It seems a lot more complicated than what it really is. The problem that we're dealing with is that we have had in the law since, I think, 1993. We've had in the law since 1993 provisions that allowed us basically to make exceptions to our basin plans, and that means that we could consider applications for uses that weren't otherwise listed in our basin plans. And this is important in particular because we have a lot of basin plans that have been around for quite some time now, and it's going to be a while before we get around to updating them, so it's important to be able to consider uses that weren't otherwise considered. The problem that we had is that that law had a sunset provision and it expired December 31st, 1998, and we should have been here 2 years ago to have that sunset extended once again, but we missed that deadline, and so right now we have a gap. And what we're asking you to do with 2164 is basically to reapprove language that has been in the or a provision that's been in the statute for a number of years now. We haven't had to use it very often. I think we've only used it four times, but it has been useful on those occasions, and the statute has provided good safeguards, we think, to make sure that we're not allowing these exceptions unduly, but when there is a good case to be made, then we'd like to have the authority to do it. You should have in front of you, I think, the A3 amendments, which are recommended by the department, and they're addressing my testimony. The purpose of those amendments is just to clarify the wording. And this issue did come up on the House side, and we played around with it a little bit, but we weren't able to reach agreement with all of the folks who were interested in it at that time, and the House committee wanted to keep the bill moving. So they passed it out of committee. We continued working in particular with Scott Ashton, who represents the Association of Nurserymen, and worked out the language that you see in the A3 amendment, which doesn't change the intent or the purpose. It just clarifies the wording to say that we can consider an application rather than accept an application. And the concern was that we had the word accept an application that might imply that we would approve it. And all that we're talking about is being able to file it and then let it go through the regular process. So I hope these comments haven't made it sound more confusing. What we are hoping is that you will accept the measure with the A3 amendment. And Senator Tarno, do you want me to go into the issue of A5 amendment?
Well, let me just mention my concerns, Martha, and I can throw out the A5. When I went through the bill and saw the original bill, and then I saw the A and growth version, I tried to figure out what had happened, because I recall that we did work on this thing back in 1995. And I remembered, so I did a little bit of research, and the more I got into the A and growth version, the more confused I got about what was actually being tried to accomplish. When if all we really need is a sunset taken care of, I thought we could do that without complicating the issue. That's why I put on the A5. So if you have no version to it, I'd like to get the A5s passed along with your A3s, and then get it if necessary. And I'm not sure it would be necessary if you had a conference committee over in the House, but get back to them. I'd like to make sure it's a clean bill instead of being confused like I was when I was through it, if that's okay with you. I'm proud simple you.
That's a good point.
Mr. Chair, we would certainly support that. Let me just offer this additional explanation that Section 1 of the A and Growth Bill basically restores the language that fell out when the sunset took effect. Section 2 is, as I understand it, the kind of new way this session that Legislative Council is dealing with future sunsets.
Yeah.
So what the A and Growth was attempting to do is restore the language until 2003, and then there would be a new sunset date. But instead of just saying this bill sunsets on a certain date in 2003, what you have in Section 2 is what the statute will read when the sunset takes effect. So what it looks like you're doing is enacting one provision in Section 1 and then completely undoing it in Section 2, and that is, in fact, what you're doing. What the A5 amendments would do is basically eliminate the sunset, so this would become a permanent provision. That's how the department originally brought the concept forward, and we certainly don't object to that. I just want to make sure that it's clear that by the A5 amendments, we would be eliminating Section 2 and making this a permanent provision. And if we wanted to do that, then our recommendation would be to adopt only lines 1 through 5 of the A3 amendment, which relates to changes that we wanted in Section 1, and then adopt the A5 amendment. And by doing that, you would make permanent this authority to grant exceptions to our basin program, and you would include the clarifying language that we proposed in the A3 amendment.
I'm closing for the hearing. We're in work session on House Bill 2164. And Ray, I think the draft is going to take a conceptual amendment to the A3.
As Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're going to have to do a conceptual amendment to the A3s and to combine the A3s and A5s if you decide to move on both.
Okay.
What? I would go to A3 first.
Yes,
conceptual amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So you want the A3s moved into the bill first and then move A5s into the A3s, or you want the A5s into the A3s?
Need to, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you need to do on the A3s is a conceptual amendment adopting, if you wish, lines 1 through 5 of the A3 amendments, not the entire A3, because if the chair and the committee move the entire A3 and then move the entire A5, then both of the proposed amendments will be adopted, and you indicated that you only wanted to adopt that one portion.
So we take a conceptual motion for the A3's lines 1 through 5.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran moves a conceptual amendment in the A3 amendment to House Bill 2164, lines 1 through 5 only. But folks, do you understand what we're trying to do, members of the committee? Okay. Any objections to that? Hearing none, so order.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
And you want the A5s to move the A5s into 2164.
Senator Corcoran moves the dash A5 amendment to House Bill 2164. Any objections? Any agreement? Okay, so moved. We'll do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move 2164 amendment to the floor of the due pass.
Senator Corcoran moves House Bill 2164 as amendment to the floor of the defense recommendation. Discussions?
One question, sir. Now we moved the alteration or the conceptual amendments to the dash A3, but we didn't move the A3 into the bill. Is that correct?
We did move the A3 as conceptual amendment lines 1 through 5, Tom.
We did.
That's that first section.
Okay. I heard the conceptual amendments didn't move into the bill. Okay.
Any objections to the bill going to the floor? The clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator
Chair, House Bill 2164 has passed the floor of the defense recommendation. The chair will carry. Close the session on 214. We'll open our House Bill 2865. After Mr. Hey, Madam Co-Chair. Do you want to testify or some of those?
Absolutely.
Please come forward.
You know, what are you going to bring up?
Mr. Reese and
come up with me. I'm fine to have you.
And Don Schoenberg.
Yes.
Reese.
This is the lady that founded budget, I believe.
I'm always going to remind her what I was
saying. Yeah. Nobody else in the building did, but you certainly did, Representative Lewis.
Go ahead.
I got this. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm the state representative for District 29. And we're here today with House Bill 2865. This is a bill that deals with an issue that has been a long-standing issue in land use planning, and that concerns the siting of utility facilities onto farmland. And there has been some difficulties with that, even though that was put into the statutes originally as a permitted use, probably back in the, had that date at one point, 60s, I think. It was a permitted use in the statute. But there's a little word in the language that says utility facilities necessary for public service. And necessary has been a word that has created some difficulties in court cases, specifically McCaw Communications versus Marion County. And this bill attempts to deal with how do you define the word necessary and be fair not only to the utilities, but be fair to the agricultural folks who are trying to use the land. There was a very large work group who worked on this most of the session, which did include the Oregon Farm Bureau, Special District, League of Oregon Cities, Department of Land Conservation and Development, Association of Oregon Counties, Oregon Department of Agriculture. And that group worked and came up with the language that you see in House Bill 2865. There are a few other things that 2865 does relating to siting of fire service facilities that provide rural fire protection services, and also there is a section dealing with the creation, restoration, or enhancement of wetlands on high-value or other-than-high-value farmland. I would like to recommend this bill to you and recommend all the hard work that everyone else did.
Thank you. Questions of Representative Lewis? Okay, thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Schoenberg, Mr. Lewis, who wants to go first?
I will. Don, I am Burton Weiss from the Special Districts Association, and Don and I and Leslie have just confirmed this on the House side, so we'll try to repeat that for you if we can. The committee has -7 amendments before them, and there is a reason for the -7 amendments. As we passed the bill in the House, 2865, which I believe was 54-5, I think was the vote on it. Legislative Council contacted us and identified two problems. One was that the bill, as it was organized in the House version, was organized in a manner that was inconsistent with the rest of that statute. So we called a meeting of the interested parties. We met with Chris Crane from Legislative Council. He gave us a draft of how he thought that chapter should be organized. We all reviewed it, had attorneys for all the various parties review it, and they all agreed that organization is better than the original organization. So that is, it did not change any words. It didn't change any effect of the bill, but it did reorganize it so he could avoid having a triple letter A subsection in this part of the statute, and we didn't want to go on record as being the first group that caused triple letter A to be in the statute. The second issue that arose between the House and the Senate was there was an objection to the wetlands language that it didn't come under the relating clause, because the relating clause dealt with utilities, and the wetlands language talked about wetlands generically. And Don can talk a little bit more about that. But the -7 amendments do include a change that takes out the wetlands language that was in the House side and replaces it with a much more narrow line that is on the -7's line 3, where it says including natural waste treatment systems but not including, and that is inserted in the portion of the bill that deals with wetlands. So it'll only deal with wetlands that are used for a natural waste treatment system and not wetlands in general, and that places it under the relating clause. So there's no question then that this is in conformance. What that language means is that a land application or waste disposal using natural acreage kinds of applications will be required to go through the process that other utilities are required to do under the bill. So that's why you have the -7 amendments in front of you. Very quickly, what does the bill do and not do? The bill defines, as Representative Lewis said, the bill defines necessary. And using the -7s again, it begins at the bottom of the page, section 3.
and it creates a specific definition for necessary and what that means. And starting on line 3 on page 2, it talks about to demonstrate that a utility facility is necessary, an applicant must, for approval under ORS 215, must show that reasonable alternatives have been considered and that the facility must be sited in an exclusive farm use zone due to one or more of the following factors. And then it lists the factors. Technical and engineering feasibility, locationally dependent, lack of available urban or non-resource lands, availability of existing right-of-ways, public health and safety, and other requirements of state and federal agencies. We spent hours discussing all these words and what they meant, but we felt that these were legitimate reasons to place utility facilities on farmlands, and the utilities all agreed that we should address these facilities before we place a utility facility on the farmland. This language is meant to be inclusive. That is, this is the language that would guide county hearings officers in making their decision about the location of facilities. Because as Leslie mentioned, right now the situation is we're all over the map. We have had counties say you couldn't build a rural fire station because of the statute, because of the word necessary. We were told in Jackson County that we couldn't build an irrigation district facility in farmland because it wasn't, quote, necessary. We've had a LUBA decision which has said feasible, and used the word feasible, no feasible alternative. We are all over the map, and no one can cite a utility in the state of Oregon today with any degree of certainty whatsoever. And that goes for both the farming community and the utilities. So this language is meant to be more specific, to be inclusive on the counties, yet give the county some flexibility when they look at these standards and what to comply with. You will note on line 18 down page 2, we talk about cost. And this was a major concession on the part of utilities for farmers. One of the things that has irritated farmers, rightfully so, has been that farmland is always assessed at farm use value, which is always significantly lower than urban value land. And their concern has been is that utilities would naturally look to the farmland to site facilities because it's cheaper. So what we've said that the cost of the section may be considered. So, the cost can be considered, but they may not be the sole reason. In other words, if the only reason somebody wants to go on farmland is because it's cheaper, that doesn't cut it. You have to meet with other criteria here that show it's necessary for you to do that. And another thing to mitigate the impact on farmland when we are there, line 26 down, we stated that the owner of the utility facility shall be responsible for restoring as nearly as possible to its former condition any agricultural land and associated improvements that are damaged or otherwise disturbed by the siting or location of the utility. Another complaint that the agricultural community had was that you come out, you dig the pipeline, and 3 years later you got a swale where the land settled in on top of the field. Or if the crops won't grow there because you didn't put the topsoil back properly. And then when they call up, the utility will say, go see the contractor. They call the contractor up, they say, go see the utility. And they get caught in this spiral of responsibility. This language makes it clear that whether it was done by a subcontractor or not, the utility is the one responsible for restoring that property. So that's a major benefit to the farm community in getting their property restored. And the utilities agreed to this language. The other issues that and Representative Lewis talked about that are found in the bill is adding fire facilities providing rural fire protection services are allowed outright. They are not subject to this condition process. They are allowed outright, and irrigation district facilities are allowed outright, and both of those provisions were supported by the farm folks. They need fire stations, and they need irrigation facilities as much as anyone else so that we can clear up that part of the statute. What the bill does not do, for the record, is the bill does not take utility facilities out of the so-called sub 1 use. What that means is that utility facilities are still allowed. They are still allowed outright in EFU zones as they are under the current statute, But rather what it does is it defines the word necessary that is currently undefined in the statute. It does not change the location of utilities in terms of the statute. It is still an allowed sub-1 use subject to the definitions and the terms that are spelled out in the definition of necessary. And I think this is a really important point because we believe the bill is consistent with the Brentmar decision, which dealt with the issue of whether or not utilities are allowed outright in farmland. However, as I stated, it does establish a definition of necessary and the conditions that are imposed as part of that. I would, Don needs to talk to you about the wetlands issue. I'll only conclude with telling the committee that we discussed every word in this. We argued over every third word. Even though there are some folks who are not totally satisfied, and there's one group that doesn't support the bill. I think we reached a remarkable consensus. This is an incredibly thorny problem, but what could be more important than having a reasonable and clear process for utilities to cross farmland? Portland can't build a conduit for Bull Run without crossing exclusive farm use zones. And, we are in a situation where this issue simply has to be resolved. This is an incredibly important issue to utilities and to farmers alike, having some certainty and some knowledge about what's going to happen on their land. So with that, I encourage the committee to support the 6 months of work that's gone on to this bill and pass the bill. And that would be the -A7 amendment.
We'll hear from Mr. Schellenberg, and then we'll see the question of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I think Burton very well described the bill for you, what it does and what it does not do. I would make a comment regarding the new language in the -7 that refers to the natural waste treatment system. And just to put it clear on the record that the intent of this legislation is that natural waste treatment system would include municipal as well as animal waste. And so we're not making any differentiation there. It would include both of those. Regarding the wetlands issue, the wetlands issue is a very significant issue for us. It was one of our priority issues coming into the legislative session. It was part of the bill on the House side when we supported the bill on the House side. And our real concern there is, well, there's actually two concerns. When you're dealing with establishing wetlands, and in particular we're talking about wetland mitigation banking. I don't know if you're familiar with wetland mitigation banking, but if you are, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. The issue there is essentially you're taking land out of production when you establish a wetland. And so that's one issue, is the conversion of land from a farm use to a non-farm use. And in the case of a mitigation bank, it's so that another non-farm use can occur somewhere else, even. And then the other issue, of course, is the conflict issue. Now, conflict in this case would be, and it's going to depend on the size of it and that kind of thing, too. But when you establish a bank, depending on how big it is, how close it is to your neighbor's property, if you're establishing a wetland, how far out does the effects of that wetland reach? And does it negatively impact the surrounding farmland around it? And what we wanted to do was to make wetland mitigation banking a conditional use for high-value farmland, for our best farmland, so that we had the opportunity to do that public review and see whether or not it was going to have a negative impact. As Mr. Reese correctly indicated, the relating clause didn't allow us to have that in there. And as I remind Mr. Sweet every 15 minutes, that had they used our bill, it would have had the correct relating clause. So we're having to give up big on this issue. And I'll just say symbolically, we are going to change our position from support to a neutral position because of that issue. We did work long and hard on the rest of the bill. The rest of the bill, we don't have a problem with that, but the bill as a whole isn't where, doesn't give us everything that we need to have. And so to just say that we're going to take a neutral position on the bill at this point. If we were able to change it to position support, that'd be great, but I don't see how we can do that at this point.
Appreciate that, Chandler. Have you had any discussions from the, or any feedback from the governor's staff about the guy's job? Anybody?
I don't know if I spoke to Robin MacArthur Phillips a few minutes before the hearing. She told me she had not spoken to the governor. He was out of town. She did not know what the governor's reaction. It's my understanding, and their hearing can speak for themselves, that 1,000 Friends of Oregon is opposed to the bill and will request a veto from the governor. But Robin had not talked to the governor about what his position would be, and we feel very strongly the bill should go ahead, and we'll take our chances.
Yeah, the only question I had, Burton, was at the end of page 2, nothing in this section shall prevent the owner of the utility facility from acquiring a bond or otherwise imposing on a contract the responsibility for restoration. When you get into this circular responsibility issue, I just wonder if you're not better. I don't understand how this improves that circularity to leave that in there. It would seem like if it just said plainly and simply that the utility is responsible, that you would accomplish the goal that you had, which is to assure that the landowner doesn't have to go through a lot of nonsense.
Senator Tarnow, Senator Corcoran, the reason that's worded that way is that we wanted to ensure that there was no question that we could impose a bond requirement on a subcontract, because you know, most likely this work is going to be done by a subcontractor. It's not, especially in a municipal utility, we're going to go hire somebody to go dig the line or install a line. We wanted to make sure that a subcontractor didn't hide behind the language and say, gee, that's nice, but the law says you're responsible.
I see.
And so we wanted to make sure that the language was clear, that we could hold that contractor, that subcontractor's feet to the fire with a bond or with other requirements if we needed to, and they couldn't hide behind the language in the statute to imply that their responsibility didn't extend to cover the mitigation. We did put the word solely in the first of that sentence, though, to make it clear that ultimately it was the utility. If the subcontractor defaults, if the subcontractor fails to do the work properly, the utility's still on the hook. But we want that ability to keep the subcontractor on the hook also.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to get done
with that. Good point. Any further discussion? Folks, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
You, Mr. Chairman.
Don Doherty. Dan Doherty, I'm sorry. And next will be Ben Preston. After.
My name is Dan Doherty. I live in Lake Oswego, and my family and I own a farm in northern Marion County. I was before you on Senate Bill 1318 with this narrow and specific issue of municipal water wells. And at the time, they were talking about linear facilities, and Northwest Natural Gas recognized that that would include municipal water wells, and they altered it. So I had no more opposition to that bill. I do have opposition to this bill. I'll read you a little section right out of Newburgh's comprehensive plan. Now, first off, I'll say that this bill is sponsored on behalf of the City of Newburgh and Special District Association. The City of Newburgh is making an end run around Marion County because they got denied permits to put in a couple of municipal wells in Marion County on EFU land. It states in their comp plan that under agricultural land goals, to provide for the orderly and efficient transition from rural to urban land uses. And that's essentially what this bill does with respect to municipal water supplies, because they go far beyond any of these other innocuous utility facilities, such as cable heads and those others. They're a one-shot deal. They put them through, cover them up, you don't get into those things again. municipal water wells, what comes along with those are EPA requirements, DEQ requirements, Oregon Health Division requirements, and they get nothing but worse. In 1992, Newburgh's utility or water master plan stated that there would be a need to acquire a number of lands that were within wellhead protection zone and stormwater capture zone. They gave a couple of options. It was prepared by CH2N Hill. The reason was they felt they would have to control within those zones cross pipe, irrigating, effluent, and chemical applications to the ground, and that would protect their water supplies. Now, they got rid of that option because they said it would be costly and require too much purchasing of land. The other option was to have Marion County, through wellhead protection laws, administer those requirements for them. So, essentially, you have fee title ownership of a little piece of land by a city for a municipal well, but you have these massive areas outside that where people are affected, the first one being the wellhead protection zone, within which the city can say, well, we don't want irrigation, don't plant this crop type, no chemical application, no, don't put any effluent down on that. Then you have that bigger, the groundwater capture zone, and those can go out for 10, 20, 30, 50, or 100 years, depending on how far the EPA tells them they have to protect that water zone in the future. Those are massive. And they would have the same protection, essentially, that a well-kept protection zone would have, and that is no effluent, if it's going to interfere with the groundwater, no chemical applications, no irrigation, and they would control crop types to prevent that from being a situation that pollutes the groundwater. So you turn these areas, you urbanize them, you turn them into resource lands for municipal water supplies. And you might as well at that point do what Portland did, you know, take an unincorporated county where they have all the septic tanks and incorporate them and put them all in sewers. Just pave the thing over and put in sewers and put it in the UGB. It has the same effect. What I've done is I have proposed on the very last page some amendments to this. And these are amendments that came to me from Marion County. And these amendments on this narrow issue of water wells, again, would allow the counties to look at this from more than just a rubber stamp standpoint. We went through this and we found that City of Newburgh would be able to get these municipal water wells under five different ways under the way that this has been rewritten. So this would allow, these amendments would allow the counties at least to have some control so they're not just simply rubber stamping these applications. And I'll tell you, it's easy under this to, I don't see any utility facility application with being denied, to tell you the truth, anywhere. So the two amendments that I've offered here would basically allow them to deny an application if they cannot mitigate it. If it cannot be mitigated and you end up with something where there's going to be massive wellhead protection or groundwater capture zone protection on ag land, and you get into property rights issues and takings issues, which would follow for regulatory takings, then it allows the county to deny it if that looks like it's going to happen, or if that's going to happen. And that's where I see the real property rights issue in this whole thing, too, is that when they can tell us what crops we can plant or what we can't put down there, we're not farming anymore. I have property in Clackamas County, and I was denied a permit to put a home on it, 2.5 acres, DFU land. But they can deny my putting a home on it. They can now deny my farming it under the utility facility rules in here where it relates to municipal water wells. And there's, like I said, there's nothing else in here, cable heads, natural gas pipelines, or anything else that has anywhere near this kind of effect. It's only municipal water wells. And that's what I aim these specifically at. They do not touch those other types of utilities.
Mr. Brody, I will not entertain any amendments today in this committee, but chances are this will be going to the conference committee. And that would be the location for your proposed amendments to be considered. Okay. I'll give you a chance to get them printed out also.
I might be able to give Mr. Brody the comfort of the record in terms of establishing this is not about water, but about natural gas.
Yeah. Primarily, that's your right.
You know, I mean, that's not the... And that's not totally comforting, but...
Well, that's what I had heard on 1318, and Northwest Natural Gas was nice enough to take out their linear facilities business, which included the utility facilities. But this was sponsored on behalf of the city of Newburgh. And they're simply making this end run around Marion County. And the city council, they put out these memos and said, okay, we're not going to do anything until we see what happens with this bill. Then we'll go back to Marion County. And they hired CH2M Hill to disprove these other water sources. They spent only a little bit of money on those to just show that they're not engineering feasible or whatever it was they were going to do. And the rest of it is spent entirely, of the money they're paying to H.M. Hill, spent entirely on going to Marion County and getting them to understand. So while, you know, those other issues in utility facilities and Northwest Natural Gas, that's fine, those are innocuous. They're a one-shot deal. These amendments are aimed specifically at the municipal water well. And they would not encompass those other aspects of it.
Questions, Mr. Zilley? Mr. Lee, thank you. And Dan, get those drafted up to LC and keep them on hand for the conference committee.
All right, thank you.
Blair, Johnson?
Good afternoon, Chair Carno, members of the committee. My name is Blair Batts, and I'm representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. 1,000 Friends is opposed to the anger of this bill. We don't think that the current case law is bad. We actually think it's good. It has a very strong, clear definition of necessary from the McCaw case, which is actually incorporated in this bill. And it makes it clear that utilities cannot be sited on agricultural land. They can be sited somewhere else. Unfortunately, there's a loophole in this bill that pretty much undermines that good policy, and that's contained in the definition of location independent. And it's on lines 18 through 21 of the A and gross version of the bill. The bill provides that a utility facility is locationally dependent and therefore may be located on agricultural land if it must cross land in one or more areas zoned for exclusive farm use in order to achieve a reasonably direct route. That's the language that we're concerned about. In our view, it will be pretty much impossible for a farmer to argue successfully against a utility that a route is not reasonably direct or is reasonably direct. It's too wide open, broad language, and we think the farmers will lose. So we thought this was a reasonable effort to try to find more clear and objective criteria to help the utilities. But we think that it ended up being a balance that has tipped in favor of the linear facilities and against the agricultural interests in an unacceptable manner. We therefore are going to oppose the bill. We do have draft amendments that we would love to present to the conference committee or anyone who'd be interested that would address our concerns. But now our concern is quite serious, and we think that this language undermines anything else in the bill that's good. We have no position on the wetland issues or the fire service station issues. We're totally neutral on that. So it's simply with the now we think very negative criteria for citing utilities. Thank you.
Question for Blair?
Thank you.
Margaret Kirkpatrick. Margaret, if you don't testify, if you don't want to.
Okay.
And Jennifer Robinson, DSL, the same way. Also, Jennifer.
There's
a
question about wetland
mitigation
today.
Okay. Thanks very much. We're going to close the public hearing on after 2865, and going to work session. You know what you're saying? What's the name of George? Well, you got the A7s, and I guess we remove those and get this thing out of here if you guys are comfortable with what we're doing.
Sure.
Okay, so we're in work session.
Mr.
Senator Sinclair.
Move dash 7s into 2865.
Senator Corker moves the dash 7s into House Bill 2865. Objections? Discussions? Hearing none, so order. Senator Corcoran.
Move 2865 amended, the floor to pass.
Senator Corcoran moves House Bill 2865 as amended, the floor to pass recommendation. Okay, call roll, please.
Senator Corcoran.
Aye.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Wilde.
Aye.
Chair Carlo.
Chair, aye. House Bill 2865 passed the floor. Anybody want to volunteer in this thing? Let me carry it. Oh, yeah, I will. Sure, okay. Hold work session on House Bill 2055 and 43 are adjourned. You got to go someplace? And this committee is closed.